So let's go into the open public input. And we'll hear from the public. Okay, we've got testimony on a variety of things, and to be polite, we just take the testimony in the order in which you signed up for it. So the rules are that the commission allows 3 minutes for each person. We'd like you to come forward and sit in one of the chairs in front of the mic. You can be about 5 inches from the mic, and we'll hear you nicely. Once your time has elapsed, you will hear a beeping noise. Sometimes people get so into their what they want to say that they can't hear the beeping. So I will let you know that your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. I'll call you up two at a time. And the first person who will testify is David Branham, if you'd come forward, and Nora Mina. Is Nora Mina here? You can come forward and sit at the front table. No problem. Okay, Mr. Branham.
Hi, my name is Dave Branham, and I'm here representing the Washington State Bow Hunters. And we want to first thank the department for its recommendation to reestablish the Goose Prairie unit as a spike and antlerless elk opportunity for archers during the general season. Washington WSB supports this change and asks the commissioners to vote yes to approve. Secondly, we'd like to talk about the lighted nox. WSB supports a modifying of the rules to allow a narrow exception for the use of lighted nox while archery hunting. The WSB maintains and will continue to support the long-held general rule of not allowing electronics on a bow and arrow. However, a narrow exception for a lighted nox would not undermine the basic principle of archery hunting as a primitive sport, a short-range weapon sport. The WSB recognizes two types of advancements in archery technology. There are those advancements that tend to increase an archer's odds and opportunity to take a humane shot on a game animal versus those that assist an archer to recover a game that has been struck by an arrow. A lighted nox on an arrow simply helps an archer see shot placement and retrieve an arrow. Seeing the flight path of an arrow and being able to find the arrow to confirm a hit and what type of hit the arrow had on a game animal can be valuable information to the hunter. While the level of the benefit of lighted nox has to an archer is debatable among some archers, WSB believes the positive benefits of a lighted nox outweigh the potential negatives. A lighted nox does not help or increase the odds that an archer will take a long or risky shot. A lighted nox only lights up after a shot is taken. A bow hunter would still have to see his target to shoot in legal shooting hours. A lighted nox does not help an arrow fly straighter or faster. Thus, the effectiveness of an arrow to harvest a game animal does not change. A lighted nox works similar to brightly colored fletchings and nox, but more effectively in the visibility is greater than just bright colors alone. WSB supports the WDFW's adoption of legal shooting hours and maintains any equipment choice must be used within those hours specified in the rules. I'd just sum it up. You have a copy of this also. The WSB believes that the adoption of advancements in the archery technology must be balanced within maintaining the primitive nature of archery hunting. The WSB stands by a conservative approach with regard to technology adoption and will continue to stand by the general rule that electronics should not be allowed on bow and arrow, with this narrow exception for lighted Knox.
Thank you.
We thank you.
Okay, would Daniel Hall please come forward? Okay, Ms. Mina.
Thank you. My name is Nora Mina, and I'm representing myself and some other neighbors in our area, which is out by the Lure Beach boat ramp, which is on the Nisqually Delta. And I'm coming to the commission meeting this morning because we have some very serious concerns regarding access and safety at that boat launch. Daniel will speak to some of the issues, and I'll give you a little piece of the information as well. We did prepare a handout. There are enough for all of you. I understand you'll get them after the meeting or at a break. But we do have photographs and a list of the issues and our concerns. So primarily the issue is that there is a stormwater drain that runs under the top of the boat ramp and goes and then down again through a pipeline down onto the beach. That drain line has had some serious problems for over 4 years. The Thurston County Roads Department has done some work to fix that, but obviously it's on Fish and Wildlife land. In December, when that broke, the pipeline finally broke, there was a small landslide on Fish and Wildlife property, which has affected your picnic area. That water now surfaces and flows across private property. It's threatening a well house that belongs to one of our neighbors, whose well house is down in the draw there, and then is going out on the beach. We are talking to both Thurston County, and we have tried to talk to the Fish and Wildlife Department about this. I sent a letter at the end of February to the department and to Thurston County. I received no comment back. We do know that lawyers are talking because it is Fish and Wildlife ground, but it is Thurston County drainage. There's also drainage off of private property. I understand there are issues there that need to be sorted. Our concern is, one, the broken drain is washing out more and more underneath the asphalt, so more and more of the access to the boat launch is being blocked. Some people are not observing that. They move the barricades back closer. We're worried that at some point either a boat trailer is going to fall through the asphalt. North Thurston Public Schools has a school bus that uses that as part of their loop. That gives them access, the only place to really turn around in that area. They have gone out and looked at it. I did not check back with them to see what their concerns are. The garbage truck, the recycling trucks, they all use this loop that requires going around the corner at the top of your boat ramp. So serious safety issue there. The line continues up Scenic Drive, which, again, part of it is on the DFW ground. Part of it, I'm not sure if it's private or public. However, that drainage line needs to be fixed, and we are going to continue to try to talk to all of you, so that's why we're bringing it to you as well as the county, to try to get some long-term fix taken care of so that access to this boat ramp, which is incredibly an important resource, is taken care of. Thank you.
Okay, LaFawn Sutton, would you please come forward? Hey, Mr. Hull.
My name is Daniel Hull. I'm the executive director of Nisqually Reach Nature Center. It sits down at Lure Beach. We're a nonprofit organization. We've been doing education and research for the last 30 years. And I'm going to be kind of segueing and kind of completing what Nora was talking about earlier about this drainage issue at Lure Beach in the conjunction of working with the county and state. Just to give you a little bit of background of what we're looking at here and how the center kind of views this. We're looking at an issue that impacts not only the residents in this area, but also the folks that want to actually access this public access point. We created a 15,000-acre aquatic reserve in that area, if you're not familiar with that. And this area in the South Sound is becoming a paramount place where people really want to make a connection with the resources that we have. And it's a very interesting and special place. We've been doing visitor use surveys at the Nature Center now for almost a year. And just to give you an idea of some of the statistics that we've gotten so far, the people that are actually using this boat launch, one center, we've got, in 10 months' time, approximately, these are preliminary numbers, we haven't done the full crunch yet, but 18,666 people coming down to utilize this area. Out of that 18,666 people, there's 8,568 people launching boats ranging from kayaks, canoes, power boats. These people are hunting, they're fishing. Looking at the economic impact here is another thing to actually kind of consider when you're saying, what kind of value does this site have? Once again, our Nature Center reaches about 2,200 kids in educational programs. Those buses come down into the parking lot each time, too. Like Nora was saying, this hole's big enough, you could probably fit a Volkswagen in it, and it's getting bigger. I please implore you to look at the pictures and things that Nora has put out about this particular problem, and just wanting to recognize that there's a lot of community members that really value this area and value the fact that they want the state and the county to be able to work together, because we as a community, well, we're you. Yeah, so I'd like to thank you all for giving me an opportunity to speak, and I hope that we get some resolution sometime soon.
Okay, before you leave the front table, Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Can you give me a little quick, I'm trying to relate to how Fish and Wildlife drainage pipe fits, or is this draining and running water on a county road, a state road?
I think I'm going to ask Deputy Director Storr to address this question.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks, folks, for bringing this to Commission's attention. As I understand it, and I'm trying to recollect as I sit here, at some point with the developments that occurred around there, the county permitted, unbeknownst to us, this drainage pipe to come down the hillside. Actually, I believe runs underneath the ramp. I think, first noticed that when the erosion started to take place. And it is a sizable hole, and I think Nora mentioned that the discussions have been going on over the last month or so between attorneys and some of our Region 6 staff about who's responsible, and the engineers have been out looking at what it would take to repair. I know we're looking for dollars. If we decide that it's our liability, our issue, I don't believe we do at this point in time, so we're trying to convince the county to step forward. Meantime, it continues to grow and continues to be a problem. So we've got to have some resolution here soon. I'd invite either of you, Daniel or Nora, if you want to contact me, I can expedite some of the communication anyway.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I also have to compliment you. You did a very effective job presenting, both of you, presenting the issue, lots of facts, made a very vivid picture, so good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. So would Brady Wotowicz come forward, please? And Ms. Sutton?
Hi. I'm talking about the Latted Knock. As a bow hunter here, my dad, he's pretty strong about this, so I've gotten into it. And I see the Latted Knock as help so much because since we've been talking about it, he watches a lot of hunting shows. So I watch it, and I see how useful it is. And as a bow hunter, I've missed shots. I've shot them, and then with the buck that I got, I shot him, and I thought I had a beautiful shot on him, and then we found him, and, it wasn't as good as I thought. And with the Latted Knock, I would have been able to have seen exactly where my shot would have been. It was daylight out. I could see perfectly fine. But with the Latted Knock, it would have been easier to see exactly where I shot him. And it also would have helped me find my arrow, find where you know, because there was plenty of blood to show that I had hit in a good place. But when we found him, it was just blood. It didn't really hit like anything exactly vital. And if we had found the arrow, it would have told more of the story. And I did find the arrow, but it would have been easier with lighted knock. And I have pink lighted knocks, so I'm excited to get to use those. So I I really want this to pass. So
thank you.
So, thank you.
Good job. Bruce Barnes, would you come forward? Okay, Mr. Wojtowicz.
Okay. My name is Brady Wojtowicz. I live at 14,000 Spirit Lake Highway, Tooele, Washington. I'd like to thank the chairman and the commission for the opportunity to speak today. Since speaking to you on February 9th this year, I have found 13 dead elk in and around my residence, seven of them having hoof rot. The rest, unknown. I assume they were from starvation, winter kill, old age, or other disease. The 50-plus elk that I see every day, to me, appear to be weak and in poor overall body condition. From reading in the book, Elk of North America, which is referred to by many biologists as the Elk Bible, it has everything you want and need to know about elk. It states that high incidence of necrobacillosis, which is hoof rot and other related diseases, is one of the best indicators of less than optimal habitat, mismanagement, or both. In reading the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Big Game pamphlet for 2012 and reviewing online hunter information, I have discovered that there are over 157,000 hunter days starting the 1st of August and ending February 28th in the affected hoof rot areas. The elk season is 193 days, equaling approximately 1,813 people in the field per hunting day. The extreme effect of human interaction with the herds in the affected areas is obvious if you live there. Besides the overhunting, the WDFW sponsors 3,898 special permits in an area they claim to have 12,000 elk. Keep in mind, these are in addition to the general hunting elk and deer seasons that are allowed in the same area. This mismanagement has resulted in excessive stress contributing to the poor health and body conditioning of the elk, which makes them more susceptible to hoof rot disease. I plan to do my part to limit the stress by not buying an elk tag this year. I also find it interesting that in the 2012 Washington State Big Game Hunting Pamphlet, page 93, the WDFW defines the RCW penalties for violations concerning chronic wasting disease, how they test for it, and their plans for prevention for a disease that has not yet been detected in the state. Yet there is no mention or concern regarding hoof rot, a disease that has infected over 55% of the elk in southwest Washington. So I'd like to ask you to make hoof rot an agenda item at a future Fish and Game Commission meeting to allow more in-depth discussion and public disclosure to take place. Thank you again for allowing me to share my concerns regarding this matter.
Thank you. Okay, Mark Smith, would you come forward? Okay, Mr. Barnes.
My name is Bruce Barnes. I live at 4101 Northeast 50th Avenue, Vancouver, Washington. I'm a lifetime resident of the state, founder of Mount St. Helens Rescue, and extremely concerned about the state of our WDFW and the lack of management in the state. I've composed a letter to the governor, Inslee, and here's what it says. We're requesting an investigation of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife for the following issues. Number one, creating a potential health and safety risk to the citizens of the state by allowing to hunt sick animals. Number two, the WDFW creating violation of public trust by not disclosing the condition of the elk and the affected game management units, in addition to not including the information in their yearly trends and status report to the governor and the public in the big game pamphlet. Number three, in our opinion, they are guilty of gross negligence by promoting the sales of licenses and special permits allowing the harvesting of sick animals with no public disclosure of the elk condition or the existence of hoof rot disease or any information concerning human consumption of these sick animals. This could have been done through the 2012 game hunting pamphlet. B. Profiting from the sales of licenses and special permits to hunt GMUs known to have 55% of hoof-rotted infected animals. Number four, the wasting of big game animals, including and not limited to elk and bighorn sheep. Animal cruelty, allowing the allowing and witnessing the pain and suffering and slow death of wildlife is cruel and inhumane. Number six, by not implementing a treatment containment procedure when first detected, allowing the spread of hoof rot in Washington State's elk herd to reach pandemic proportions, covering over 11 counties and 23 game management units. Excuse me. Myself and my organization and others have made numerous requests for someone in this agency to address these concerns. We have spent many hours of volunteers' time in attending meetings, phone calls, emails with no reasonable solution, resulting in no implementation or any containment treatment of this hoof rot in the state's elk herd. Additionally, we feel the lack of action concerning the elk herd, bighorn sheep, and other game is the gross mismanagement of the state's precious resource. Our concerns and efforts have fallen on deaf ears. We feel that this is a direction or dereliction of duty and a violation of the oath of the Office of the Managers of the State Wildlife Resources. For this reason, we are requesting the resignation and removal of the following individuals directly responsible for creating and contributing to these above crises: Miranda Wacker, Chair of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission. May I please continue? Phil Anderson, Director of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Dave Werg, Big Game Manager, Division Manager of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Sandra Yonkers, Region 5 Manager of the Fish and Wildlife. When the Department of Fish and Wildlife is no closer to the solving of this pandemic hoof rot spread of this disease than they were 18 years ago. In the beginning, one game management unit is now spread to 11 and 23 game management units. We are additionally requesting to bring in the assistance of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife outside biologists to implement an effective strategy to contain and treat this valuable resource. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife should do this before the 2000 game regulations are approved. We appreciate you making this a top priority of your administration. Without action taken, this could represent catastrophic liability, which will exceed state liability. And you've all got a copy of this, and also I've distributed about 250,000 of these stickers through all the hunters in the state of Washington. I can just about guarantee you're not going to want to see this on everybody's vehicle. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Bob Brown, please come forward. Mr. Smith.
If I could ask, too, the pictures that I sent up, I was hoping could circulate while I was speaking, because we talk about hoof rot and we think it's a hoof disease where it's actually a no hoof, and I handed those in. And I appreciate the Chairman for changing the agenda this morning so we could have an opportunity to hear the report. It's nice to know that now, after 16 years, the Department of Fish and Wildlife feels that this is a major concern. As for not knowing the level of the disease, in your own website, you will find the statistics that we gave you. It's between 55% and 80%, according to the 2011 study by Fish and Wildlife biologists in Region 5, is how much is affected. That accumulates to 11 counties and 23 game units. Okay? Over the past 16 years, I've been coming to meetings like this one to address members of the Fish and Wildlife Commission with my three precious minutes to ask for your assistance with elk problems in Southwest Washington. From feeding elk back from harsh winters, from overpopulation deaths in the 90s, to tribal hunting issues that occurred in the 90s and the early 2000s, to trying to increase tags and license to get sexes in normal population status in that area after the eruption. I've also volunteered several thousand hours and times in planting, seeding, going out on mort counts, and cooperating with the Department of Fish and Wildlife as much as I can. I've requested more enforcement officers and protected the area from poaching. I assisted in department stings, which led to criminal investigations and arrests. And I've watched directors resign and new Fish and Wildlife commissioners step up who make me promises there'll be change. Today, I come to you before again to ask you for your assistance with hoof rot, to make it a real agenda item so a real discussion can take place. Many people don't come to this meeting because they don't see hoof rot on the agenda, and they would like to hear more than just 3 minutes of citizens ranting about the problem. I would also like to request the Fish and Wildlife Commission to support the request I made of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, as I am the private citizen who was asking to create a private research center along SR 504 to establish habitat enhancement projects and conduct treatment and testing for diseases on elk. We feel that this will allow faster response and the ability to try to find different applications and treatments in a smaller controlled environment. We intend to work in total cooperation with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who is the managers of the game in the state, but we feel a private sector approach may bring faster and quicker response. Therefore, we would like to ask you to support that study model when it comes before you. Another area that's not on this but came from the topic is, while we're testing these animals, think of their health. Also, you have to consider the habitat, the carrying capacities that are there. Soil samples, I don't see have been done in the area. I don't know, maybe they have, but I think that's a really important thing, is we need to check the soil testing and habitat that these elk are in. It's specific to that area. We're one of the only counties in the country that have a volcano that erupted, which could have changed and altered that. We have gone in and manipulated the area through sediment dams, retentions, helicopter seeding, sediment dams and retention structures, which have also changed the habitat. And we also, in our forest practices, use herbicides to do 4% of the logging areas now, which does deplete the natural environment that grows there so that the trees grow. That in itself has a reduction of carrying capacity. And I think while we're looking at the animals, we need to also look at the habitat. Thank you.
For you.
Yes, sir.
Leave the table. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd be curious if you had an opinion on what we should do for hunter harvest for this season.
You know, on the hunter harvest season, and I'm glad you brought that point up, because the recommendation from the Department of Wildlife, which is, while it's caring for the hunter, it's saying don't shoot a sick animal. So now by not shooting sick animals, you're going to get more sick animals than you ever had. We're going to just harvest all the healthy ones. That's not a real good, intelligent approach. With the hunter harvest in that area, I would like to see, because I also agree with Mr. Watowitz's comments, when you hunt for 193 consecutive days, that's a problem. We know we have to reduce the herds. I think if you had your seasons in a more compact time period, we would get better harvest records, and we would be able to reduce the herd sizes without stressing them. We're in a rock and a hard place. You know, you have sick animals that nobody wants to shoot and take care of. Unfortunately, we need to eliminate the sick animals. I mean, that's a reality we're going to have to approach. So I would think that I've been on several other committees and planning commissions. I would try to set up a public advisory committee maybe in that affected area to come up with hunters and the department to establish a harvest plan for this year specific to those game units.
Thank you. Edward Barnes. Okay, Mr. Brown.
Good morning. My name is Bob Brown. It's Robert W. Brown, 11019 87th Avenue, Southwest in Lakewood. Good morning, Madam Chair and Director Anderson and members of the commission. You know, coming into this meeting, I was convinced that that there was a bunch of ineptness going on here, that you guys weren't paying attention. But my sense is, based on the testimony of the others here, is you haven't been given a heck of a lot of information here. So it's a little not good of me to accuse you of being inept. You're just now getting on board with this problem, evidently. So by way of information, I'm a master hunter. I am currently serving as a chief hunter education instructor for Tacoma Rifle and Revolver Club. I'm a licensed Jäger in Germany and in the Czech Republic. And when I went through that training to have those designations, I learned that our first obligation is to the animal. To heck with the protocols, to heck with the procedures. And we have folks, Sandra Yonkers, with whom I had an extensive email exchange here recently, who seemed to stand on that we've got to wait and do this. Well, the disease is not waiting. It continues to take out our animals. And I'll just use the horse terms, but if that rot gets up into the pastern or the hock and gets into the body cavity, that animal is in excruciating pain. And we have an obligation to that animal to take it out. And I would say that what we ought to do, Mr. Director, is commission, in the sense, master hunters, you have 2,000 plus here in the state of Washington, and allow them to harvest those animals and take them out of the herd. Now, we've just heard from Nate that we don't know how this disease is being communicated. But the conclusion I draw is that it is being communicated. Somehow, we don't know or understand how, but it is being communicated. So let's take the sick animals out. It might take us 10 years to get rid of this out of the herd, but I think we can do it in a good, controlled way if we employ master hunters. And I'll just give you another example. You have a shoot that's going to go on here soon with bighorn sheep in the Omtanum Ridge area. You're paying sharpshooters to go out and take those animals out. But every time we ask the commission for money or ask the department for money, we get the time-worn answer of, oh, we can't afford that. But yet when the free resource is available to you, you don't use it. Use your master hunters in a much more constructive way than you're currently using them, and you will allow us to sign off on the hours necessary for us to renew our master hunter designation. I think that the direction we ought to go is take out the sick animals now. Questions?
Thank you. Ron Figler Barnes.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much for having a meeting today and having something on the agenda besides fish. Usually the agenda's all got fish on it. I know fish is very important to the economy of this state, just like the big game is. I got a couple of questions I want to ask, and this is not my first time here, and you know that. First off, I want to know if you issue elk tags to anybody in the state this year, if you're going to issue a letter with that, a disclaimer saying that the state Fish and Wildlife or the state of Washington is not going to be legally liable or responsible financially for anybody that gets sick and died from this tainted meat. You got a biologist back here. Can he answer that? Can you guys answer it right here today that you're going to accept the liability for anybody that gets an elk tag without the person getting sick? Are you going to give them a letter when you give them the elk tag saying that you're not going to be responsible for anything that happens to them if they eat that elk? You got an answer for me. Anybody got an answer? Is the gentleman back here that you had talk first is supposed to be the expert? Has he got an answer? Is the meat safe to eat?
Could you please just provide your comments, because we don't typically engage.
Well, no, you're supposed to be able to answer back to me too, Madam Chair.
Well, we can't at this time give you an answer. So would you just...
Okay, my second question to you is then, are you going to send a letter to all the meat processors in the state that are currently doing elk and deer? And I have one in Vancouver that's quite concerned that this elk meat is contaminated. If he takes and continues to process it in his plant, is it going to contaminate all of his meat in his meat counter and that? And then people get sick. Is he going to get sued? Is the state, the governor, who's going to be responsible for the people that get sick from this tainted meat? I mean, it's a fair question to ask. You folks are supposed to be the experts up here. You have an expert back here that you're paying. You should be able to answer. Is that meat processor going to be held unliable? Is the state going to be liable for anything that might happen, just like any other, whether it's bird flu or whatever else it is that happens to people when they get contaminated and they end up suing? Is the state going to be one of the parties in that suit, whether it's with the hunters or whether it's with the processor? We need to know that. And if you're not going to take that responsibility, then you should not issue the elk tags this year to anybody. No elk tags should be issued out. And what makes a master hunter any better than me, but I've been hunting for 71 years, I'm 80 years old, I probably know more about elk hunting and deer hunting than anybody in this room. I've hunted elk, deer, bear, cougar, moose, everything. So master hunters, this thing, the master hunter word makes me sick in my stomach. So anyway, I'm telling you that we need to do something about this problem, and it's been going on too long, and I just want to know. I want a legal opinion that comes out of this commission to the hunters, and legal letter that goes out to the processors of this meat all of the statewide. Are you guys going to accept the responsibility? The state going to accept the responsibility and the legal liability that goes with this, Madam Chair? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Axel Swanson, please come forward. Hey, Mr. Figler Barnes.
My name is Ron Figler Barnes, and I'd like to voice a concern about herbicides and pesticide use in elk habitat. I was fortunate enough in after the Mount St. Helens eruption to work for the USGS and you know, witness, you know, the devastation that was associated with that eruption. But one of the standing jokes, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years later, was when we went go up over Mount St. Helens to do our research, was the tremendous amount of clear cuts, which I don't know, doubled or tripled the amount of devastated area. And you know, it was striking. You know, especially when you flew over it. You know, it's like, wow, that's quite something. Now, the herbicides and pesticides associated with all of those clear cuts and what has continued to this day, and actually I think it's increased in the clear cuts in Southwest Washington as well as, you know, other counties, has been tremendous. And, you know, the elk forage on those clear cuts. And, you know, there's immune system issues. You know, it could be something that, you know, if they're not getting enough nutrition, you know, that they're more susceptible to, you know, hoof rot. It could be, you know, half a dozen things. I thought the idea with the soil testing, that's an important consideration. I know that, you know, that some of the herbicides being sprayed are supposed to have a life of 3 days or something like that. But within 3 days, elk feed on that those foliages. And so there's a concern there. And it might be, you know, something that is worth looking into. And I'm sure that the University of Washington and other researchers have probably started looking into that. But, you know, this is something that really affects all of us. The elk herds in Washington State are an icon, and it is something that we really do need to control and figure out what to do. As far as destroying the elk, I don't know. You know, that would be kind of hard to deal with. And then the question is, okay, we take out the herds, then how long is it going to take those herds to come back? Or if they ever will come back. So this is a heritage of this state that really needs to be, you know, dealt with.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, thank you. Just addressing that, Nate, and I don't want to put you on the spot because I know it'll probably come in June, but within the parameters of the study being undertaken, I'm sure that the herbicides, the pesticides are part of the study parameters, right?
Something that's been mentioned, I don't know the okay. details of the protocol, Commissioner.
Okay. And one last follow-up. Do you know if the university team is working with the corporate partners in the state that are significant land managers and their team of scientists, or is this premature to ask?
I simply okay. can't speak to the
sure.
details of those.
Okay,
numbers.
Thank you.
I don't know okay. what's been said or okay.
Okay, thanks, Nate.
Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of the suggestions about soil testing I take to heart as a soil scientist. I'm thinking that through, and there are very good soil samples soil maps available for all of Washington, and at least maybe that could also be evaluated. I'm not sure what you'll find. A lot of those soils are from ash deposits of Mount St. Helens, either recent or historic, you know, from the eruptions 5,000 years ago. And there, you know, there might be enough of a tie there that you could identify some cause. I don't know. But, you know, that particular type of soil only exists in certain places. You know, volcanic ash soils are mapped to a certain level of taxonomy that identifies certain properties, how much ash, how much silica. You know, there might be something there that at least is worth looking into, and I appreciate those comments coming in.
Thanks. W. Boone Mora, please come forward. Mr. Swanson.
Yes. Chair Wecker, thank you for taking my testimony. My name is Axel Swanson. I'm here representing the Board of Clark County Commissioners, and then also have some personal comments as a former county commissioner in Cowlitz County. I kind of at least personally cover most of Southwest Washington in my experience. The Board of Clark County Commissioners is very concerned with the hoof rot issue as a policy mm-hmm. consideration for the Fish and Wildlife Commission. They sent a letter. It's been about a month ago asking to put this on the agenda, and so we're happy, I think, to hear that this will be coming forward as a full agenda item in June, and we appreciate that, and I'll take that back to them when I go today. I guess, you know, for me, I live on the Cowlitz River, so I kind of live with and see these elk all the time, and one of the things that your staff said that I want you to remember when you leave the meeting today. I've been a commissioner. I've listened to all kinds of public testimony. I get where you're at. But one of the words your staff said was startling. And when I hear my staff say something like startling, that's a cue. That's not a public testimony. That's your staff. And when you see these elk, it's startling. And so I've heard some conversation today about maybe setting up an advisory group. Mark Smith has a great place down there. It's big enough to host people. I'll invite you to his place on his behalf because, you know, I could do that. I've been there many times. But you really need to set up maybe a subcommittee of yourselves and go witness this if you haven't seen it. Like I said, I've been living with this. My dad called me last year and said, hey, there's a cow elk. He lives in the city limits of Longview, you know, that's laying down between the neighbor's yard and our yard. And it laid there for a day. Fish and Wildlife finally came out and shot it, but it laid there on three legs. It had three legs. Last week I was going springer fishing with my brother, and I take the back road to get to the boat launch, and there's 15 elk in the field, and I videotaped it and turned it in. But, you know, all 15 of them were limping. There's, you know, on any normal morning, this is what you'd want to see in Washington State is 15 elk 50 yards off the road with a majestic 5x5 bull standing there looking at you. He hobbled off on three legs. He didn't even put his back leg down. You know, and I just sat there and videotaped it on my way fishing. And that's kind of what I think folks in our area are dealing with all the time with these. So it is startling. It's alarming. The folks here, you know, some people are heated about it, but it's because, you know, this is the most important resource for a lot of us. I mean, my family has a long history of hunting, and that's our tradition. That's what people in my family look forward to most all year long, is that 2 weeks together, 10 days together in the woods. And so this is a big deal. A couple of things. Somebody asked, is this happening in other states? I just saw an article yesterday in my research where they did put down, I think, 15 elk in Wyoming with this. I don't know if it's the same exact affliction, but they said they had hoof rot, and part of it was maybe dirty snow. They hadn't had any new snow, but they did put down some elk at the Wyoming refuge just last week. Someone said we're not seeing it in deer. I'm still skeptical about that. You know, I think I'm the best hunter and fisher in the room, and from your perspective, and I can back that up because I spend thousands of dollars on both sports and have almost no impact on the species, which is, you know, it's great. So, you know, but I have done enough deer and elk hunting where I can tell you it would be a lot harder to determine if this isn't deer. They're very elusive. They're smaller. They don't herd up like elk do. They're more nimble, so you're not going to see or notice them limping as much. So I'm still skeptical as to whether or not deer in our area are being affected by this, and I think it needs to be looked into. And two more things. Mr. Watowitz's testimony really, really hit home for me. I'm speaking personally now as an elk hunter. I think we put too much pressure on these animals. 193 days, all these special permits. These animals are being chased, from August to March, and it's just that much harder on them when they have this disease. And so I think we need to really look at that. And I'll end on a positive note. I live on the Cowlitz River, and I documented the smelt run this year. And best smelt run I've seen maybe since 2003. It was cool. Well over a week of just solid smelt coming up the river. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Jim Sutton, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Mora.
I'm Boone Mora. I'm from Skamakaway. That means smoke over water. The water plays into this problem. and that's why I put that in there. I have a doctorate in public health, parasitology. We have herds of elk that leave their calling card in our yard at night, and so we're close, and I've observed them up close, some of them. You can't determine whether it's dangerous to people or not until you have found out what it is. And I think I have a lead on that, and I would like this body to know that so that we can get a little bit of support to find out if I'm right or wrong. There's an organism that is ubiquitous in wet Washington. It is ubiquitous. This bacteria can infect all mammals. It doesn't infect birds or reptiles, etc., but it infects all mammals. There are approximately 175 of these bacteria, one genus, one species, and about 175 serovars or serotypes. I did my dissertation at the Center for Disease Control on leptospirosis. We as scientists have a peculiarity in that when something happens and we don't know what it is, we get really excited. And we just know it's something exotic. And we want to discover it. And we want it named after us. Instead, the best approach to an unknown is to start with the most common. And leptospirosis is ubiquitous in Washington. I talked to Dr. Mansfield, and I think she did a study on this years ago. But it is so common, nobody wants it to be lepto or a common thing. And I was at the Center for Disease Control in the heyday of the Legionnaire's disease. I've never seen conduct like that. Brilliant men and women running around like chickens with their heads cut off. Couldn't find out what the problem was. Well, leptospira, you cannot stain it with the usual stains. You cannot see it with the usual microscope. It is difficult to culture it. You have to do it from a live animal. You can't just take a sample, take it to the lab, and put it under your whatever and do all the stuff. It doesn't work that way. And for that reason, about 83% of the time, it is never suspected because you don't get to it. You want me to quit?
We want to hear more.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Time passes fast when you're having fun. I have the cooperation of CDC. They will send me media and so forth. I just need the permission to tranquilize a few elk that have it. Let me explain to you what happens, why this is a good take. First of all, Washington doesn't allow elk farming. Oregon does. I talked to three different good big elk farmers who've been farming for 30 years. They've never had hoof rot disease and that never seen it one time in 30 years with thousands of elk going through their farm. They immunize with 5 leptospira. They give them the vaccine. So they've never had this. So it is so common that it is in the water that runs on the land, that it is shed by elk in the urine, and so forth, makes it a really good possibility that that's what it is. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, and it wouldn't humiliate me at all. What will humiliate me is if I don't get a chance to try it, or somebody doesn't try it. Now, with science, you need duplicate. You need two different or more persons working on this. And so I would urge you not to put all your eggs in one basket. Get somebody else that can do it. I really would like that checked out first. Rule it out. Now, here's what happens, and here's why it's the pathological. It causes a vasculitis in whatever organ it attacks, and it can attack everything, and it mimics all diseases. mimics all diseases. So your first thing is it's not that, it's something else. And now, so it'll cause a vasculitis in the joint of the elk. Oh, okay. Then here he goes, or she goes on three legs. Then she gets it on the second one. That way she's got to start putting pressure on that. Now, when they hold their foot up, which they do for hours at a time, the hoof will overgrow. When the hoof overgrows, it is now with two, they've got to use that hoof. And so with it overgrown, because it hasn't been abraded like normal, so now it is misaligned. So when they have to use that hoof, it bruises that inflamed joint. And that's it in a simple nutshell, in my opinion. This disease fits this organism like a glove, in my experience. And I'm 82 years old almost, and I'm an outdoorsman, more a hiker than a hunter. Somebody's turned this off, and I don't blame them. But anyhow.
We appreciate that. We got a couple questions. Commissioner Mankin is first.
Yeah, a couple of questions. You noted that there were vaccines that were being used in Oregon against the disease. I assume that you would have to test whether those vaccines were efficacious against the bacterium before you even attempted to immunize elk. How would you, do you have any ideas on how you would then, if you knew that it was an efficacious vaccine, how would you immunize a herd of elk or sick animals within the herd?
Well, if you decide and determine that it is leptospirosis, your probably best bet is to incorporate an antibiotic in some feed. It would be a task to immunize all the elk. The thing you don't know, that I know of, I've not heard, is whether or not any of these elk get cured from it. Do they get a bad, you know?
Yeah.
We don't know that. I guess if you could send people out with dart guns and immunize them, I don't think that's probably necessary. I don't know how. First, I'm here to say I think it is that particular organism, and then other experts would determine how to immunize them or to treat them if that is in fact the case.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. And I'm just struck with a phrase that I heard back when a friend was in medical school, and that is, if you hear hoofbeats, don't think zebras.
I'm sorry, what?
If you hear hoofbeats, don't think zebras. In other words,
yeah,
just look for a more common association,
right,
which is exactly the point you're making.
Yeah.
And unless you're obviously in Africa, but... Thank you.
He's not trying to confuse the discussion with zebras.
I think his point is well taken. The common is what you go for first.
Yep. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very helpful to hear your comments. I don't want to make this sound simple, but if I understand your comments about trying to tranquilize several animals, is the technique then followed by blood tests and then analysis, or is there more to it than that, sir?
You simply take, I would want to take some blood samples and inoculate the media right then in the field. In a dead animal, this bug disappears quickly. And it is a zoonosis. It is will infect human beings. Yeah, and a lot of people die, and they're the last thing to be diagnosed, and people die from it. They go all the way from and epidemics of this go for years without being diagnosed. It's because the difficulty in culturing, the difficulty in staining. You can see it under a dark field scope, but first of all, you got to get into the laboratory alive, and that's not easy. It's common. It's spread by the water. Rats carry it. Possums carry it. You name it. All mammals carry it. Bats carry it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. And we will certainly take up the topic at our next commission meeting in June in more detail. Okay, Mr. Sutton, you're the wrap-up.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Duvia, Commissioners, and Director Anderson. First of all, I'd like to compliment that last gentleman for speaking. That was absolutely awesome. And if I'll touch on it real quick because I'm going to be short on this anyhow. If you so choose to this year, compensate the hunters who harvest a bad elk in those units, I think that that might be a wise idea. Just my own personal opinion. Okay, but I'll get back to why I'm here. Most of you know. excuse me, it's the lighted knock, and I am speaking today in favor of amending WAC 232-12-054-1B, allowing the illuminated knock. My name is Jim Sutton. I am president of the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. I am also an archer. I am representing myself and the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. The following groups support the use of the illuminated knock: the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, the largest conservation group in Washington State, the Washington State Bow Hunters, the Washingtonians for Wildlife Council and the Hunters Heritage Council, the Mule Deer Foundation of Washington, the Game Management Advisory Council, and over 85% of the archers statewide polled by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. This is just an option. You do not have to use those for those people who are out there trophy hunting. Please allow us to use this, have the option to use the lighted knock. It's been a great journey. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the open public input. Director Anderson?
Thanks. I just wanted to offer a few comments on the hoof rot issue before we leave it. I think it's fair. One gentleman represented that, well, some of you sitting up there apparently don't know a lot about it, and therefore maybe there's a reason to understand why we haven't discussed it more at this table previously. And I think that's a fair observation. I think that I've been in this job for a little over 4 years, and while the hoof rot disease issue has been brought to my attention, certainly previous to today, in the last 6 to 8 months, it's fair to say that it's been brought to my attention a whole lot more than it has been in the previous 3 years. And while I knew of its existence, I can't honestly say that I paid a lot of attention to it. Yeah, I will now. Thanks. And I think my other observation, and it's just that, it's not being stated factually, is that this disease is advancing and it's escalating, and are among the reasons there are more and more people who are concerned, and there are more and more animals being observed, and by members of the public going, what the heck is going on here? We need to do something about this. And I agree wholeheartedly with that perspective. We have the responsibility to do our very, very best to try to identify the cause of this disease and look for solutions. There may or may not be a cure. It may be communicable, it may not be. It may be something that's associated with the soil, and you could go out and call every individual that's out there that has it, and you'll have fewer animals suffering at the end of the day. But if we have something going on down there that is causing the disease for maybe there's contamination of the soil, But there may be any number of reasons for the disease, and the solutions will be quite different depending on what the cause is. Let me read to you, if I may, just a little. I've been working with our wildlife program, both here in headquarters and at the region, trying to understand, trying to give some direction on what we should do to confront this issue. We are working on, and words are nice, results are much better, but we're working on a study, and let me read this to you. The design was developed with researchers at WSU College of Veterinary Medicine. Samples were taken and sent to the veterinary diagnostic labs at WSU, Colorado State University, University of Wyoming, and the University of Liverpool for a variety of tests in order to identify the cause of hoof disease in Southwest Washington. Most of you know the collections of the animals were both in Region 5 in the affected area and was also in Region 6, where we had similar habitat to Region 5, but we didn't have observations of animals with the disease. We also took some from Region 3 over on the east side to be able to compare results. The agenda, we've got this item on the agenda as a major item for the commission in June, and one of the reasons for that is to bring forward the results of this study and to see what we have for conclusions, see what we have for alternatives in terms of solutions. And I think the other part is this issue about public human consumption of meat from these animals, and can it be harmful to humans if they consume the meat? And that's another very, very important thing for us to work on as well and try to come to a resolution and an answer with as quickly as we can. As Nate Pamblin said, we don't have any evidence at this point in time to suggest that they're, provided you take the you and your butchers take the necessary precautions to not eat obviously bad meat, that there is a human consumption or public health issue associated with it. But we need to be more definitive about it than that. And yes, it's the USDA's responsibility for public health in that regard. But that doesn't alleviate us from, in my mind, from doing everything we can to develop the data and bring forward the information to be able to ascertain the public health impacts of eating meat of an animal that has a disease. And we may find something out as a result of this study in June that causes us to take a much different direction this fall relative to the hunting season. I don't know. I can't sit here and say that today with certainty one way or the other. But if we find out some information, for example, that says if you cull these animals, you can prevent the spread of the disease further or at least diminish it in a significant way, maybe that's the way we have to go, and then figuring out how to do it. The other thing that I heard was a real interest on the part of a number of you here today about being involved and being a part of that decision-making process about, okay, here's what we have, here's the information we have, it may not be conclusive, and what are we going to do with it? I don't know that I can do the same thing that Axel did in terms of scheduling a meeting at Mr. Smith's facility, but I think that is something that we have to do and we want to do, is engage you, involve you, show you what the results are from the study and try to figure out a path forward that makes sense. So I wanted to offer those comments to all of you after having several months of both listening to you as you've come to this table and testify and reading the material that you've provided us in terms of where I think we need to go, the direction I think we need to go, and the work that we've been doing over the course of the last 6 or 8 months to prepare us to have the
the appropriate conversation with the people, our constituents, that all of you represent. So that's what we intend to do, and we will come back and have the first vetting of the information that we get from the results with the commission in June. I hope you all are able to join us and hear it, and we'll map out a pathway forward from that point.
Okay, sir.
I believe the June meeting is here. Yes.
Yes.
So thank you for indulging me for a few minutes.
I know the commission has a lot of interest in the subject. We are about close to an hour behind in our schedule, so just keep that in mind because we've got some other topics and we've got all the hunting rules to adopt. So keep that in mind as you keep engaging in this, Commissioner Dubia.
Fair warning from the chairman. I appreciate that. I just want to echo what the director said. This is a problem that Nate Pamplin and Dave Ware in the department, we've talked about this for about 3 years in our wildlife thing. The issue is one complicated one that we haven't been able to tackle because we don't know all the problem and what the solution is. The county commissioners in your area, I'm about as far away from you guys as you can get in our state, but I have spoken with county commissioners in that area at least annually about what they're seeing the problem and asked them to help keep us informed of what's going on, and I think our staff is in the region has been trying to diligently go ahead on that. So though we haven't publicly come out and addressed this maybe as openly as you would like, we have been trying to find out as much as you guys have what the problem is, and we are concerned with it, and we will do what we can do to get this resolved as fast as possible. So just wanted you to know that we are and have been looking into this.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to reiterate exactly what Phil and Commissioner Duvier said, but I concur. The one thing that might be helpful, I think, and I guess I'll ask Phil to figure out, is not necessarily an org chart, but a list of engaged entities. Nate, you mentioned several, WSU, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. It might be helpful just to know who is engaged, the other universities and the other entities out there, just so we have some idea of the spread of requests for knowledge.
Dr. Henderson?
That will all be a part of the report that we bring you in June. So you'll be aware of, because we have reached out, as I indicated, to other resources. The gentleman brought forward the idea up here this morning is another one. Appreciate you doing that and relying on the expertise of people that have got, I think he said, 82 years on this planet is a good thing. So, but we will be sure that we do that.
I'm sorry, we can't take any more public input. No, I just said that we can't take any more public input. You will be welcome to talk with staff during our break. Sorry about that. Thank you.